The smartest guys around are about to break it down like they've won the game a million times.
Well, actually, they didn't really win the game at all.
Survivor know-it-alls.
Everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino and I am back with the highly anticipated part two of our Stephen Fishback interview. Stephen!
So glad I made it, you know.
Has this been the best received project you've ever worked on? The two-part post-Survivor 31
interview? I will definitely say this has been the best received project related to Survivor that I've worked on in the past 6 months. Like, certainly better than my run on the show is talking about the show. So, yeah.
Almost a 98% approval rating for you and your return to the podcast.
I think there's just one or two people who, you know, are real, still don't really anti it, but, you know, I'm watching. No, it's really incredible, incredible feedback, which has been awesome. Like, it's been, a lot of, you know, people were excited. I was so touched by how, you know, people were into it.
Yeah. I hope we don't blow it here today, but it did seem like for the most part, people really enjoyed part one of that. They felt like the time really flew by. And of course, it really did fly by for me as well in terms of planning out the show, how it was going to go. So we said, okay, Stephen would come back and we'll talk about some of the things from after Stephen got voted out of the game. And then, of course, I have a lot of questions from the listeners of the podcast. Of course, if you didn't hear part one for whatever reason, you were sort of just coming out of some New Year's Eve hangover, or for whatever reason, you just slipped past you, you can go ahead and check that out on robhasawebsite.com. And I will also post a link to it in the show notes on robiswebsite.com. How's everything else going since last
week? Yeah, things
are good.
It's been a big week. I just got a 65-inch TV, so I'm really excited about that.
Whoa.
Yeah. You know, I want to see TV in the way other people do, you know, which is bigger than I have been. So I've never really had a big, luxurious television. So that's exciting for me.
So you waited until after you were off Survivor to get a big TV.
I didn't need to see that any bigger than I did. That was fine. I watched that on my phone.
That was when I was on the show the first time. That was my parents went out and they bought like a big, for the first time, they bought like a flat screen because they wanted to see the show in like the optimal standard definition viewing of 2003.
You got all the VHS tapes that you recorded it on?
Yep. Big parties. All right. Well, Stephen, I am very excited because we mentioned on the last podcast that we did that we're going to be doing for the first time ever a Know-It-Alls live on the West Coast. And yes, I can confirm that that is the case. And we have a date and the tickets are now on sale for February 24th, the second episode of Survivor Color Wrong. We're going to watch the show live and then talk about it in front of a audience at the Hollywood Improv. Can you believe it?
I'm so excited. I love live Know-It-Alls. And, you know, if you're on the West Coast and you probably haven't come to the East Coast for one, like, this is a really, it's such a fun night. You know, we talk Survivor, we hang out, you know, it's great to watch in a crowd with such an, you know, enthusiastic, intelligent group. So I'm psyched for it.
And it's going to be totally different because this time we're on the West Coast.
We'll
probably
weather.
Spend the day at the beach beforehand.
Exactly.
And then we'll probably eat sushi for lunch and stuff like that. And then at nighttime, we'll go and talk about Survivor on the West Coast in Los Angeles. It's going to be fantastic. If you want to come out for that show, and everybody has always had, if anybody's ever had a bad time at one of these shows, they haven't told me about it. I've only heard good things.
I could not believe it. It's so fun.
Yes. You can go to robhasawebsite.com/KIA Live 4. Number 4, KIA Live 4. robhasawebsite.com/KIA Live 4. The tickets in the past have sold out very quickly, so don't wait around.
It still bugs me a little bit that there was a live Know-It-Alls that I wasn't at. You know, like, I wish I had been able to come.
You could have come. You had to go to...
You know, I could. I'm not bugged at you, just that the situation worked out since I wasn't there. You know, it's so fun, and that there's like this thing exists that I wasn't there, that there was like fun missing from my life that I could have had.
Yeah. But you were off in where? Mongolia?
Mongolia, yeah.
Now, don't you think it's weird that when we had dinner at a Chinese restaurant a couple of weeks ago that I had Mongolian beef, but you didn't say anything that you had been to Mongolia? I was thinking about that after our dinner that I had the Mongolian beef. I'm like, oh, that's weird. I wonder why Stephen didn't mention to me. Like, oh, yeah, I went to Mongolia.
I mean, you don't need to always be saying to everyone, oh, I went to Mongolia, you know.
You didn't want to be like a bragger.
I feel if you can't even notice that I went to Mongolia, you know, I shouldn't be pointing it out.
You probably were like looking down your nose at me at like, you think that's Mongolian beef. I've had real Mongolian beef.
I don't order this American stuff that they call Mongolian beef.
Yes.
No, it's not even, yeah.
This peasant Mongolian beef. I have the real stuff.
Yeah.
All right, well, we will be, I don't know if Mongolian beef will be served at the live know-it-alls, but we hope you can come out in person. Go to robinswebsite.com/KIA Live 4. All right, so Stephen, let's pick things back up. So we ended up talking about how you went out of the game in that night before Thanksgiving, and you ultimately did the vote steal. Is that what we called it?
Yeah, I mean, I used my advantage. That's how I called it. You know,
you called it the advantage.
Yeah, yeah. Use the advantage, did not work out for me. Watching it back was even worse. You know, I've relived that moment just like in the voting booth, and I'm just like trying to like will myself to vote twice, like to go back into time through my mind and just like put them both on Abby. But it doesn't work.
Did you remember saying the thing about you were going to marinate in voting for Joe with Joe's vote?
Immediately as I was eliminated, I said to, because you know the producers outside, they interview you right after, and I was like, I am going to look like such a douche for saying. they were like, you are. It's like a TV show. You know, chew the scenery a little bit. Let's have some fun out here.
Yeah. All right. So then you go from that, you get voted out. You were such a good sport about it. What did you say? You were like, that was a really good move, everybody.
The advantage was that I had really thought I was going to be going home the previous week, the previous episode. So I had planned what I was going to say. So I felt like very, you know, I had my remarks, my remarks ready for when I.
Oh, so you premeditated.
Well, I thought there was a very good chance. Yeah. I thought there was a very good chance I'd be voted out. And like, you know. So I was like, compliment people. I was happy. I was actually like pretty thrilled with going out where I did, because I had this kind of like, you know, elaborate nightmare of making it to the final three and then just like, or meeting with Jeremy. And so my thought was like, you know, at final four, I'm just going to have to like quit, you know, like I'm not whatever happened. Exactly. I'm going to chop my arm off at final four. Cause I'm not going to have that happen to me again. So going out like I did, which was like big threat, big sort of episode, big move, blindside. Sort of a blindside, but you know, I was delighted with the whole thing. And I think I kind of had this just left with this big grin on my face. Cause you know, I played hard and did what I sort of set out to do. And, you know, for me, like also just having my big flip of the game in the Wigglesworth move, like that to me was like, okay, I've like done something serious out here. Like I've got like a, you know, some notches on my belt. Now I can like safely, you know, just have some fun and whatever happens, happens. Like winning is unlikely given the scenario I'm in. So just play hard and like do my best.
So now this really marks the beginning of a totally different experience for you, because even though you didn't win back in Token Sheens, you made it all the way to the end, and the experience up until they read the votes is exactly the same as the person who wins the game, other than sort of the flowery praise from a jury of your peers. But then this marks the part where you have this different experience outside of the game. And so you get voted out and they sort of do their medical tests and everything. And then you head back to Ponderosa. Now, you, back when I first met you, I remember you often used to talk about the flawed jury system of Survivor. You and Russell Hands,
the game is
both
flawed.
Said the Survivor jury system is broken, and you advocated for the jury to be sequestered. Yeah. Do you remember
this? Of course. It's a longstanding, you know, belief of mine, and that belief has just been reaffirmed by my experience. I don't think a sequester is possible logistically, and certainly just like in terms of, you know, taking people who are voted out of this incredibly traumatic experience and then just like, you know, sticking them in a room alone for 2 weeks probably would, you know, seriously do more trauma than, but and even just the logistics of it, like getting that many people out there to make sure it's sequestered. But I do think that there is, I mean, it's not a flaw in the game because it's the nature of the game, but there's definitely, you know, there's the jury itself is problematic, I'll say.
Well, do you really feel like logistically it would be impossible? I mean, what would ultimately be, and this is total devil's advocate here. I don't know if this is even what I want, but wouldn't it be exactly the same as pregame? They don't let people talk. I mean, couldn't you have the same exact setup? I mean, nobody talks about how, like, well, it would be impossible to have the survivors not talk to each other in the pregame.
Yeah, I guess that's right. I mean, you know, pregame lasts, you know, a couple of days, a week at most, right? This would be, you're talking about, and people are coming into pregame, you know, relatively psychologically healthy, you know, barring a few outliers. You're coming out of the game like a total mess, right? You also don't have anything to lose, right? You're going into the game like docile, right? You want to be on product. You want to like be good, you know, you want to behave well, right? Because like you're about to get this incredible experience. You're incredibly excited. You don't want to be removed for breaking the rules. But after the game, like why on earth, you know, like what threat is there to stop you from talking? Like, you know, you'll to each other. I just think it would be hard in terms of like people's psyches. I mean, it's a long time. Some people are out there, right? Cass was out there for 3 weeks on the jury. It's just a lot of, you know, it would be hard to police.
But it would be easy to police in the beginning, and it would become exponentially harder to police as more people show up. So I don't think it's like, well, you couldn't have that sort of like task force out there for 3 weeks because, you know, the first 3 days it would be, you know, only one person and then only two people. But I understand what you're saying. I just feel like that at the end of the day, to get that sort of out there in the Survivor lexicon before we get to Survivor 32, at the end of the day, I kind of feel like that the show only benefits from anything that's going on at Ponderosa, because if, you know, you and another person like are talking the whole time at Ponderosa, then you get really worked up and then you really blast somebody at the final tribal council. That all just, you know, is the benefit of the show.
The only thing is like, and I know, you know, people will argue like, so listen, I mean, like the baseline is right. People talk, right? People are talking and people are influencing each other, and you're not like supposed to talk about it, but you don't really have a clear set of guidelines on how you're supposed to behave on the jury. And, you know, the idea that you're not supposed to talk about it is just like almost a myth. You know, there's no real rules in play. So people talk and they influence each other. You know, they're constantly influencing each other, even if they don't want to be, right? Even if it's not deliberate, people are influencing each other with their biases, with their anger. You know, if you're spending 3 weeks with someone, you know, after the game, healing with them, bonding with them, and that person is super, super, super angry at someone who's in the finals, you know, that's going to bias your opinion too. And the same thing is true of like just the stories people are saying, right? So people are telling each other this happened and this happened and this happened, you know, whether or not they think the things they're saying are true, they're not necessarily true, right? They could be presenting a very skewed perception of reality. And again, you're coming out of this incredibly traumatic experience. You know, you're very emotionally vulnerable. You hear someone saying, oh yeah, you know, JT hated you from the beginning, or Fishback hated you from the get go. You know, you're like, he did? Like, what a jerk. Like, how could he, you know? And then that's coloring your perception of the whole game, and certainly your perception of the jury at that point. You know, I mean, there's a scene of me and my Ponderosa like reacting to Sierra saying, you know, Spencer was out to get you from the start. And suddenly it's like, oh my God, Spencer is the cause of all of my problems in the world, you know? And, you know, in this case, I think Sierra wasn't lying, but she certainly could have been lying, right, to protect her own role in that. You know, she could, you know, rather, because she's got to live with me now. You know, she doesn't want to be like, oh yeah, I was out to screw you over, sorry about it. She wants to be like, someone else was out to screw you over and I was just going along with it. And then, so just the way that happens, and it's inevitable, right? So whether or not you're deliberately trying to influence the jury is getting influenced. And people will say, well, that's part of the game. You know, that's the case going in, that the jury's talking, that you have to control people's emotions and attitudes. But like, it's really impossible, I think, you know, and like how you have no idea if one person is going to be super angry or is going to behave in a way that's completely, you know, outsized and have this tremendous impact on everybody else. So you could, you know, have one blindsided ally who turns an entire jury against you.
I think that my opinion on the whole thing is that I'm a realist and it just is going to happen no matter what. So I don't think there should be any sort of like people having like some sort of construct where it's like, oh no, you're not supposed to talk about it while right. you're on the jury. But you feel as though the process is actually flawed.
Well, I don't think it's flawed because it is what it is. I mean, I guess in terms of like designing, if you were to design a perfect system, right, you would want to control for jurors talking to each other. But like, it's nothing is a perfect system. You know, there's a lot of randomness in Survivor, you know, like who there's a lot of just like luck and chance. And, you know, you're at the mercy of people's emotions and tempers the entire game. So like being at the mercy of that afterwards, it's like, you know, in terms of like 10 people coming together to elect the person who played the best game. Like, I don't think the jury can necessarily do that because it's such an emotional decision that's so controlled by, you know, bias. But, you know, I think they can get somewhat close.
Did you enjoy your time on the jury?
Yeah, the jury was awesome. I loved it. I mean, the jury for me was like, you know, the best part of the whole experience. You know, you're just like hanging out on this. It was like a lovely tropical beach vacation, you know, and I got to ignore some people who I didn't want to talk to. It was wonderful. You know, I'm a little bit of an introvert, and having to talk to people, be on, care about people, you know, connect with people day in and day out is like, you know, takes an emotional toll. It's just exhausting and a lot of energy. And then to be able to come out of that and, you know, sit for 10 days and just kind of like process the experience is really wonderful. And I will say that, like, you know, last time I was on, I left on day 39. And basically, you know, 6 hours after I had left this insane, crazy game, I was on a flight home. Then I was with my family who knew nothing about what I had experienced and couldn't, you know, understand it at all. And so I think for the finalists, you know, they are left and people, you know, like you, certainly for your first time, right? Like the people who are off just before, you know, you're left with this total whiplash of like, you're still like gaunt and crazy eyed and, you know, you don't know how to process your experience. But sitting on the jury for 10 days, you know, eating well and talking to people about it, processing it together, you know, comforting each other when you're mad, you know, just like it really, really helped me sort of, you know, think through and kind of emotionally come to terms with the whole thing.
Did you drink a lot on the jury?
I didn't. We had a really old jury. So, you know, like Abby comes off and she's like expecting the show. She's like expecting to party. And we're like, you know, we pretty much like read, you know, it's like, we like, well, okay, like Savage will have a glass of wine, you know, I mean, Cass would drink a little bit, but it was you know, we were old, you know, like I think we were probably one of the older juries they've ever had. So we were just like, you know, doddering around the beach in our, you know, in our like, sunning ourselves.
And I saw you were making cookies with Kelly Wigglesworth.
That was great because one of my biggest complaints out the whole time was that was just baked goods. You know, I was really craving baked goods and they're, you know, not a lot of baked goods on Survivor. If Survivor was set in a bake shop, I think it would be very different.
Yeah.
But so it was fun. You know, and it was like that, you know, it was like a little like healing moments like that, you know, working with people who were, you know, who were mad at you and, you know, and sort of doing things together and, you know, food-based things are great for healing, right? Mm-hmm. Like they're great for bringing together. Like everyone loves food. Everyone loves baked goods.
You said earlier that there were people that you were ignoring or enjoying not talking to. When you were at Ponderosa, who were you referring to?
I mean, I was jokingly referring to Savage, but actually the opposite is true. Like I had a really good experience with Savage. You know, he was like me. He just kind of wanted to do his own thing. You know, he would listen to music. He would work out. And so, you know, and he was cool. Like the first day, you know, the first day you're up before anybody else because you're used to waking up at the sunrise. And then, you know, as you sort of acclimate to normal human hours, you get up a little bit later. And he came up, he was the second person to get up my first day. And he sat down with me and we just chatted. We had like a really great conversation as like human beings without like the stress of, you know, Survivor. And, it was really cool. Like he and I, you know, I had a really, really great time with him. You know, just in general, I would remove myself. I mean, and really, that was more it, just being able to like step away from people generally.
Did you realize at the time how big of a part Savage's beanie was going to play in his overall arc of the season? It really endeared him to people, I felt like.
Yeah, people, it was so polarizing, though. Some people were enraged by it. I was surprised. I mean, when he first came out with the beanie, you know, when we were there, it was like, this is hilarious. Like, I kind of thought it was a joke. Like you thought I've been this, like, you know, tough guy this whole time. And, like, here I am. I'm, like, the surfer bro. And then when he brought it out the second tribal council, I was like, okay, like, that's funny still. You know, it's like Cass was finding new ways to flick us off every tribal council, and Savage was like rocking the beanie. I didn't realize that it was like going to be an iconic, you know, fashion statement the entire time.
People loved it. And I really do think that people warmed up to him, even people who were not fans of his on the season. I feel like that many people just came around to him by the end of the season and said, you know, the beanie. You know, Savage is a good guy, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there's little humanizing details, you know, like you see, you know, he's like not, you know, you see this very, right, it's a TV show, and it presents, you know, as TV shows go, it presents incredibly full, rounded, you know, portrayals of people. But inherently, you know, people are going to be reduced to a few key moments and key personality traits. And, you know, Savage was, you know, the tough kind of jerky guy. And then to just, like, you know, you see him in his beanie, and you're like, okay, he's like a human, you know, he's got his, like, awkward fashion thing, just like we all do.
No, it seemed like from the Ponderosa videos that there were kind of cliques in the Ponderosa, almost like that there was the Cass and the Witches group that was forming, and then there was the Savage, Wigglesworth, probably Joe group. Where did you fit in with those two groups?
Well, like, Cass took her role as mayor of Ponderosa very seriously, you know, so she, like, came and greeted everyone and was like, you know, so happy to have you, this is like a happy place, we're all nice to each other here. And I think Sierra kind of joined that welcome wagon, and they were better at just, like, chatting with people, like talking about the game. You know, Savage and Wiggles really did not want to talk about the game, and they would rarely do it, and obviously that certainly depended on, you know, who was there. When Joe came, it was so funny. When Joe came, seeing, like, Savage and Wiggles' reaction to him, it was like, you know, it was like, I don't know, it was like a dog pack, right? And, like, the alpha dog comes, and, like, then the other dogs just are like, oh, hey, what's up? What's going on? I was, I think, removed from it. If I hung out with it, I talked to everybody, but I was in my room reading most of the time, I think. You know, Sierra and I probably talked to Sierra more than anybody.
Okay. Starting to segue into some of these questions, Ron Chan wants to know, Stephen, do you have any interesting Ponderosa stories that you'd like to share? Is there anything that we didn't see in the Ponderosa videos? Any, like, funny anecdotes from Ponderosa?
That's a good question. I wish I need to think about that. I feel like there were a lot. You know, it's just like people are being, like, goofy and like letting themselves be ridiculous in ways that apparently a lot of great, like, Ponderosa anecdotes happened before I got there. Like, Savage, Cass, Sierra, and Wiggles, like, went karaokeing together, like, which apparently was a ton of fun. I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think a lot of cards were played.
Whoa.
You know, we played a lot of cards. Some board games.
I'd love to know about this, because I feel like this would be annoying. So most of the day at Ponderosa, you're not being filmed.
Yes.
And then you're
very
sort of just, like, living your day at Ponderosa, and everybody's going through the motions. But then, okay, now here comes the Ponderosa film crew. They're walking through. Do you notice, like, a conscious, like, change in people's behaviors that, like, oh, the camera's out, so now I have to be on because Ponderosa camera is out, where you don't really, like, you're sort of filmed all the time in the game, pretty much, whereas Ponderosa, it's much more sporadic.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, and especially if they mic you, you know, it's a little bit different. But I didn't notice that. You know, I think by that time, everyone is, like, just so over it that we're just like, you know, we just want to hang out. We want to be in peace. Like, you go, you do it. But I really didn't. You know, I felt like maybe people were performative when new people came, right? So you know that that's going to be, and I don't know if that's just because there's excitement around a new arrival, around a change in the dynamic, around getting to interact with someone, getting to hear new stories, getting to learn more about the game, or if it's because, well, this is going to be in the episode. But there's definitely, like, a clamor to be, you know, hey, when someone new arrives on the scene.
Yeah, I think that would be so much fun. I really, like, I envy your experience in terms of going to Ponderosa and having, like, that long jury stay before you go home, because I feel like, you know, it's, of course, you know, everybody wants to win. But if you can't have that, I feel like that is a very nice experience to have.
It was really nice. But didn't you have like a long, you know, you had a really long experience, right? Your second
time. Well, no, but it's the opposite though. Pre-jury is brutal. I mean, I think that probably if you're like a young person, that's like you can go and I was a young person when I was on my pre-jury trip, but I wasn't with a bunch of other young people where right. it's like you're having like, and I think you can sort of wrap your head around it more on a first time out where it's like, hey, these are my friends and we got to go around the world.
Right.
But to do it in the way that I did it, where I was coming into an All-Stars and I was very excited about like the prospects of playing the second time and then having so much disappointment, where I feel like you're almost less disappointed the first time, where then I was with, you know, Rudy and Tina. It wasn't like, you know, a party. You talk about you had an old jury. Well, this was really like, you know, 8 o'clock at night. Everybody's in bed except for me, you know, drinking my sorrows away.
Right, right. Yeah, no, I felt like I was out of the game for like a really good amount of time. I felt like 10 days was like a good, like sizable chunk of time.
It's nice.
But, you know, so it wasn't like, you know, Wentworth, you know, you see her, it's like, she's still like, you know, even as we were traveling home, like she still had that kind of like crazy eyed look that people have. But it wasn't also like Cass, who was just like sitting there for 3 weeks, just like counting the minutes until she gets to go home to her family.
Yeah. All right. So then is there anything else in terms of like the overall narrative? Like, do you want to talk about the final tribal council a bit more in terms of like what it was like going there? Like, is the jury just sort of like walking around? And I went to one a long time ago, but is the jury just sort of like, just like pacing all day, getting ready for this final tribal council? Did you find them to be really open-minded heading into it?
You know, I thought there were a few people, and look, like I said, you know, we talked a lot about who people were voting for, right? And a lot people's different biases, you know, certainly came out and were influencing people. And so my thought was like, look, people are going to be influenced no matter what. So I should also be influencing them, right? Like if no one was talking about anything, I would have felt, you know what, this is a pure game. This is a pure jury. Like, let's just like leave it that way. But I didn't want someone else's biases, you know, like determining mm-hmm. the winner. I wanted my biases to be determining the winner. So I definitely put in, you know, an effort for Jeremy. You know, there were some people who were mad at him. You know, I think Wiggles was really mad at him. You know, Savage was certainly mad at him. Like I said last week, where because he felt that he thought Jeremy might have sold him out. You know, Kimmy was really mad at him coming out of the show. So I tried to, you know, soften that blow. And, you know, I think that overall people were pretty into Jeremy, but there was definitely a Spencer contingent. You know, Sierra was very gung-ho about Spencer. You know, I think Joe was open, he said, to Spencer or Jeremy. I got the sense Keith was likely going to vote for Jeremy just because, like, you kind of have to. But
why does he have to? Because he was on San Juan del Sur with him?
Yeah, he's like the other, like, family man firefighter, right? Like, he's not going to give it to, like, the young banker. And I do think, you know, people are like, oh, their job shouldn't play a part in it. But, like, that's not really true. You know, I mean, you have the opportunity to give someone $1 million. Like, that's life changing for some people. And I think taking that seriously is something the jury does, like, more than maybe in an ideal world they should. You know, I was always going to vote for the best player. Like, that was important to me. You know, I also think that Jeremy played by far the best game. But, you know, I do think that a lot of people were going to vote for someone who they really felt needed as a human, maybe the money, and was like the best human. You know, we had an old school jury. You know, we had Savage and Wigglesworth on our jury. You know, I think Cass probably, had Kimmy been in the finals, like, she very well could have won. You know, I don't know, counting the votes, like, if that would have happened, but it definitely would have been close. You know, Sierra might have even voted for her, you know, like, and depending on who she was against, you know, I would have certainly considered it, because the nice thing about the jury is that you can vote for whomever you want. You know, you really get to, like, do whatever you please. And, you know, giving Kimmy this, you know, incredibly kind, hardworking mother of two, you know, $1 million, like, to, you know, change her life versus, you know, what it would mean to X other person. You know, I don't see how you can't weigh that as like a human being. You know, it's not just, you know, you're not just voting on the winner of Monopoly. You know, you're voting on the winner of $1 million. That said, to your question, like, yeah, you know, you're talking about it. People are discussing their questions. You know, is this a good question? You know, I loved Wigglesworth came to me. I was like, what do you think of my quest? And I thought it was hilarious. You know, I loved it. A lot of people were actually coming to me and asking for my opinions on their questions. And like, I honestly, for the most part, did not give a crap what other people were going to say. Like, you do you, you know, like, I'm not going to like write your question for you. I was like more concerned with like trying to ask questions of all three of them that were like indicative, but also ended up, you know, that would help Jeremy out. I don't think in our last podcast I said enough about how good Jeremy was in the game. And I feel like a lot of people think he played like a solid game, but was like the best guy. You know, he was like the nice guy. He had that speech about his son. You know, he was a family man. You know, he's a fireman. Like, he's a good guy, so he got it. Like, how's that? That's great. But Jeremy played a stellar social game and strategic game. And in fact, like, I would, you know, for a lot, he had like relationships with everybody. For the most part, he could, you know, leverage those relationships with everybody. You know, sometimes he was wrong, but, you know, he certainly was working like almost every angle in the game. And that's true of more than anybody else. And I remember at one point, you know, close to, you know, my boot and the few votes before that boot, you know, like, I had to go to Jeremy to get things done. You know, like, I didn't have relationships with Wentworth or Keith or even Abby, you know, and those people talk to him. So I'd be like, you've got to wrangle in those folks, you know, and, you know, he didn't, but like in that instance, but he, you know, like, he had these relationships that he could kind of work from in a way that, you know, I don't think anybody else really was working the sort of whole span of everyone in the game. Like, obviously everyone is you know, talking to everyone, but like, you know, and maybe he's helped from having been on San Juan del Sur, you know, being, you know, knowing Wentworth and Keith out of the gate, you know, having relationships with the Cagayan people just from being on neighboring seasons. But he really worked it and was always, always playing the game.
Jim Rosario has a question here. Do you think that Jeremy was more successful because he made little moves while everybody else was waiting and more focused on making the one big move? I think that is interesting where we hear so much, oh, I got to make my big move. I got to work on my resume. Jeremy, for the most part, you didn't really hear him talk about that this season.
Well, it's interesting because Jeremy, you know, everyone else needed a resume because of Jeremy, you know, like, if you were going to go against Jeremy, you know, you had to have a resume. You know, I think Jeremy was such a dominant figure, both in terms of like Abby called him the Big Apple, you know, in her sort of like mangled version of like the big cheese, you know, she would always refer to the Big Apple. He was the dominant figure. So for the dominant, I mean, it's a great question, Jim. And but I think for Jeremy, like, he just needs to make small moves to get to the end. You know, Jeremy is served by stasis in the game. You know, he's not served by erratic play in the game.
So you played with Jeremy and you played with JT, two guys who are alpha males who won with unanimous decisions. Could you compare and contrast the two games that Jeremy and JT played and what was similar and what was different?
Yeah, I think both of them were great, you know, at having relationships with everyone. I mean, like I said, you know, I think people genuinely trusted both of them as humans. And I think I just don't think that can be overstated. You know, is that that's like, you know, I've said in the past that strategy is, you know, there's no difference between the social game and the strategic game. And I think that's really true, you know, with them. Like, you know, you to a certain degree with Survivor, you're just making relationships with people and then like asking them to vote in a certain way, you know, based on the strength of those relationships. Now, I think this season, maybe more than other seasons, was able to divorce strategy from that sort of social sense. But I think one thing that both JT and Jeremy shared was that just based on who they were, you know, like nice, hardworking, honest, loyal people, they both, you know, sort of had that kind of human credibility. You know, I think JT is a little bit like slicker than Jeremy, you know, like in terms of like lying to your face, you know, and that's probably a good thing for, you know, I don't know who it's a good thing for. Like, JT's got more of that sort of like Southern charmer thing, whereas Jeremy's more the sort of, you know, like really great, solid family man guy. You know, JT was playing from the bottom on our season too. You know, in terms of like analyzing their games, you can't really do it without thinking of the situation. So JT was hustling around, you know, playing two alliances off against each other. Jeremy was trying to bring all the alliances together. So, I mean, I think fundamentally there's a disconnect there. I think JT was, you know, in terms of like, he was working with me, you know, like the two of us worked together. And I think Jeremy maybe to his credit or discredit, you know, I don't know if it's a good thing or bad, probably a good thing, worked with, had more people who were kind of serving similar roles. You know, Jeremy had Tasha, who he was super close with. You know, Jeremy had a really strong relationship with Spencer. So I think Jeremy probably had more diffuse relationships.
So you made so much about where Joe was the golden boy during the season, yeah, and you didn't want to end up in a similar position like you were with JT back in Token Sheens. But Kevin Severino writes in and says, why didn't you see Jeremy as a golden boy? Did you see the Jeremy JT parallels there, or did you only feel that way about Joe while you were there?
Oh no, I much more felt that way about Jeremy. Like in my, like I, you know, I was having a nervous breakdown because I felt like I was in an alliance with Jeremy and Tasha. And then, you know, it's like, oh my God, I'm reliving Token Chains with JT and Taj. It's like, so it was just like fully the exact same kind of position in my alliance. And even when I kind of did like the Kimmy Aaron parallel, you know, which was like my number one sidekick who I want to go to the end with, you know, it was like, I am literally playing the exact same game and I have to do something to break free of it. The Joe thing for me was like Joe is more like Tyson, right? Joe is more like the great athlete, kind of charming guy who was on the other team who I want to get rid of to take power in this game. But I said the Jeremy thing a lot, and that was because I wanted to build a resume. You know, the JT thing a lot.
Got it.
I made the Joe JT comparison because it was like, if I say Joe is like JT and then I take out Joe, that for me is I'm fulfilling my second chance. And like I was saying last week, you know, people really, I think, sort of start to define themselves based on the narrative of the season and, you know, the narratives that they're telling each of themselves, right? Like, so everyone was talking about what their second chance is. And, you know, Jeff would ask it all the time. I don't know if I said, you know, at the tribal council that I left, you know, he went around the room and asked everyone, I don't think I said this last week, you know, asked everyone, what is your second chance story? So they were, you know, he was really prompting us to define ourselves in terms of that. And so for me, I was, oh, hey, it's getting at the big guy. Look, I could get at the big guy, you know? And then, you know, so for me, it was that was it. And I remember like, even right at the merge, when I was kind of like solidly in with the sort of, you know, bro alliance, you know, you saw that scene where I was reciting poetry and that really like solidified the bro thing. Mm-hmm.
Is that what that did?
Well, that was how the episode kind of narratively set it up. Like they had me being in poetry and then there's like a testimonial from Cass about like how all these like guys were working yeah. together. Like people were coming up to me, like especially Abby, and she's like,
it was a bro-um.
Yeah, a bro-um, exactly. She's like, you got to do something. This is what I'm doing a terrible Abby. She said, you got to do something. This is exactly what screwed you over last time. You've got to make a move on the big guy, you know, meaning.
That's what Abby said to you?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Boy, that, I mean, that's pretty perceptive on Abby's part.
Abby is pretty perceptive. You know, I think, you know, she is not a great person on Survivor. You know, she's paranoid, mean, but she's not she's not dumb. Like she's pretty, you know, she gets it. You know, I think the level of her paranoia sort of prohibits her from being, you know, a smart player, but like
she has too much of a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, sure. Sure. Let's say that.
Yeah. With me, you're dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like Cochran told Malcolm at the final tribal council that he was paranoid and that made him a good player because you have to be paranoid. Maybe Abby just has that in spades.
Yeah. That's my problem too. It's like just like too paranoid. And that's why, you know, you have to, it's like hard like to know, like, am I being paranoid or are they really out to get me today? You know, it's like they are out to get you ultimately. Like you're not being paranoid when everyone is actually out to get you. I mean, in Abby's case, everyone just wanted to take her to the end. You know, she was being the opposite of paranoid. Had Abby just been nicer, like she easily could have, like, but obviously then she wouldn't have been Abby.
Then she's not Abby.
Yeah.
Okay. So many questions from the listeners of the podcast. Let's stick with this Token Sheens through line. Scott Green wants to know, in Token Sheens, Taj and others were unwilling to vote out JT
yeah.
in any scenario. How early would you have had to move against Jeremy to feel like you weren't letting that same problem getting out of hand again with the likes of Tasha and maybe others, people who probably wouldn't vote out Jeremy? Is that fair to say that Tasha would not have voted out Jeremy?
Well, I think I mentioned that, like that, you know, right before we voted out Wigglesworth, I had that conversation with Tasha where she was like, oh yeah, we're going to the end with Jeremy. And like that to me was like a big yeah. motivating force in like playing the way I did.
I just want to make sure I'm not misrepresenting Tasha.
No, I mean, based on that conversation, like That's my understanding of her thought process. It was like, I'm going to the end with Jeremy, you know, and that's sort of what we talked about last week, right? Like people who haven't been to the end, like feel this need to like play a game that gets them to the end. I think that is accurate. Like I could be wrong, right? Like that's based on, like, and again, with all of this stuff, this is like my perspective and opinion about it. I think she was the only one, though. I don't think there's anybody else who wouldn't have voted Jeremy out. You know, there was a lot of people who were very eager to do it. You know, certainly the witches were, Kimmy really wanted Jeremy gone. You know, I think, you know, certainly Keith really wanted Jeremy gone. You know, Wentworth wanted him gone. You know, Spencer and I talked about how at some point we'd have to vote Jeremy out. And when would that be? So I don't think it was, would have really been an issue. The only issue would have been at like final four had, you know, Tasha been that sort of ride or die with him that she wouldn't have gone, you know, that she would have like gone to rocks over it. But like in that situation, I absolutely would have gone to rocks over it, you know, but, you know, possible loss versus certain loss.
Who would you have been voting with at that final six?
That's the question, right? Like, it's so hard to say. You know, my fantasy was, right, like I said, like use the advantage or flip with like Keith and Kimmy and Wentworth at the 6 or 7 mark. It was really like Keith and Kimmy at the 6 or 6 mark was my kind of ideal fantasy, yeah. Thinking we could sort of bring Spencer along, although maybe, I don't know, you know, like I thought keep Jeremy till like 4 or 5, thinking he was be the least, you know, maybe 5 vote Jeremy out.
Yeah. Well, if you still had the advantage at 6, you wouldn't have to go to rocks.
Well, that was my thought. Like, use the advantage at 6. Like, that's what, that was like my like that's fantasy nice. Gameplay. Yeah. I mean, but that's the whole problem, right? I got so seduced by this move that was like 5 moves out from the point that I actually had the advantage. You know, that was so dumb, you know, like to, in Jeremy's words, you know, to hope to be able to use the advantage 5 tribal councils from then when just every week it would like, you know, it sort of target would magnify. Like I should have used it immediately.
These guys are so dumb.
Yeah, it's kind of like, if you ever play Tetris and it's like, oh, I gotta like wait one. Till I can put like that, that long piece over there. So let me just keep stacking everything off to the other side. And then you just never get that opportunity when you get the straight piece. And then once everything's all screwed up, that's when you get it.
It's true. I mean, if you've got to play in the situation that you're given at that time. Now, you also want to set stuff up for down the road, but like setting stuff up is different from just like starting to fantasize about, you know, moves 5 moves hence. And that's just like very, you know, it's hard. There's a tension, right? Because you also need to put yourself in a winning position. You know, you can't just, there are people who are like, we need to get through today's vote. And that's a losing game, right? To say like, this is the vote that matters right now. Like, let's figure this out.
Well, not for Sandra.
Yeah, that's true. It's, and it wouldn't be a losing game for Jeremy either, right? To get through every vote. If you're a person who can win in that way, like, you know, and Sandra wasn't even playing that game, right? Like Sandra was like trying to get Russell out. Well, I guess that's, I don't know. I guess that's
hot takes now, Steven.
I don't know. You're right. Anyway, I'm not even going to go down that road.
Yeah. You'll get beat up in the comments over that.
That's like the most contentious issue in Survivor.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
All right. Kat Smith wants to know, was Steven aware of the twist with the idols being hidden at challenges before it was shown on TV? Was it an open fact in Ponderosa? Now, this is so interesting to me because you have Jeremy and you have Kelly, the two people who had all of the idols, and they never told anybody throughout the game of where they got them from, unless maybe after Jeremy played one on you, he told you where he got it from. Steven, did you know about the idols of challenges until you got back?
So I definitely knew about it at Ponderosa, right? The question is, did I know? I don't remember when Jeremy told me that he found the idol in a tree. And it was the same tree I was looking in. He told me that he had found but I don't remember if he told me the challenge part or if he just said it, you know, said, oh, I found that idol in that tree. I think it was the latter. I don't think he mentioned the challenge thing, or I probably would have been more. Yeah, he couldn't have, or because I never had an awareness of it in challenges to be looking for the other team. So.
So how did people know at Ponderosa? Was it when Kelly showed up, or did Kelly say something to Sierra while she was still in the game?
I honestly don't remember exactly when I found out. It's a really cool twist, but I don't really remember when I learned about it. He did tell me at some point because like, God, when was it? Cause he was freaking out cause that, whatever. Anyway. Yeah. Any, go ahead.
Okay. This is a question from Matthew Bilmus, who wants to know, if you hadn't been blogging or podcasting, but were still voted onto the show, do you think that you would have fared any differently?
Yeah, absolutely. I do. I think that being a blogger and podcaster and, you know, self-described know-it-all really hurt me. I mean, you know, it probably also is why I got on the show. So I don't, you know, I'm not going to like, you know, I'm happy. And also, you know, I treasure our time together, Rob. But I think so. You know, I think I wouldn't have been such a huge target. You know, I think there, you even saw this thing with like Savagers, like Steven says he's the best player to ever play the game, you know, which are like, obviously I've never, ever, ever said that about myself, you know. I think there was this perception of me that it, coming into it, that I was a big target because of this like perceived knowledge that I had, you know, my super strategy powers. And, coming onto that tribe, I don't know. I mean, Savage was maybe going through like Skinny Ryan flashbacks. So the same thing might have always happened. Yeah, I don't know.
You know, I feel like we did a bad job before you went out there. Like, I think it would have been a good idea to sort of remind people that the know-it-all's name is intentionally tongue-in-cheek. Like, it's not really supposed to mean that we know everything, because what we used to say in the beginning was that we're the two guys who know everything about Survivor except how to win. And so I feel like that it would have been a good point to remind people, right, that the idea is that we just think we know everything. We don't actually know everything.
I don't know if that would have helped, though, just because, you know, like you go into, you know, it's like I was saying, you know, I did like my apology tour when I started the game. It was like, listen, you know, when I blog about how great alliances are and how you have to stick true to your alliance. Now, that's true, but it's like, people have the perception regardless of the facts, right? And I could have made the rational argument, you know, hey, know-it-alls means I don't know it all, but it's like, no one is going to follow that. You know, it was like Cass trying to argue with Tasha about who said bye-bye, bye-on at what point, you know, like Tasha was like, Cass is chaos. And Tasha was like, yes, but at, you know, you first said this remark and then you said this remark. And, you know, Cass was like a lawyer trying to argue this point, but it's irrelevant in Survivor. You know, like rational argument is not as important as emotional appeal.
What we should have done back in May is that you should have just gotten everything intentionally wrong about Survivor Worlds Apart. Like, Rob, mark my words, Dan Foley will win this season. Like, I will stake my, instead of trying to be the knowing is know-it-all, you should have been like, just been like, boy, Steven is really way out there. What a buffoon.
Well, I mean, they listened to me podcast during San Juan del Sur, you know, so I think they would have thought that anyway, you know, calling John Mish as the winner. And then, you know, I think that they should have had that takeaway anyway. I mean, the fact is, you know, most of those people don't listen to the podcast. You know, Savage doesn't listen to the podcast. He's not reading my blog. So, you know, most people who are targeting me, you know, certainly the people who are on the show, you know, the more recent people knew it, but like that just, you know, reaffirms, I don't know. I got nothing.
Yeah. Jonathan Schwartz wants to know, whenever you made a move, were you thinking in the back of your head what Rob would think of that move on the know-it-alls? I think that this is, I do, like, I would love to know about this. Like, when you're thinking about making a move, are you in your head at all thinking about not just me, but the entire group chorus of Survivor Twitter? Are you saying like, oh, they're going to love this, or you can see the mean tweets coming at you as you're thinking about making a move?
Oh, totally. Oh my God. Yes. You know, it's like not specifics to your point, but like definitely just the kind of general, like, oh, this moment is going to be so cool, you know? And it's just like, there was a moment when, I didn't make the show, when Joe, came to our camp, for the third buy-in, and he was like looking everywhere for the idol. And I had sort of like trailed him and then kind of like ambushed him in like a forested grove, and like kind of like strolled up, like he was like scuttering around looking for that. And I kind of like strolled up very nonchalantly. I was like, oh, what are you doing here? And then he was like, oh, hi, just taking a walk, looking at the foliage. And so I was like, oh, great, let's walk together. I just thought it was going to be such a fun, cool moment, you know, like a heat moment. Like, here we are, like sitting down for coffee. But that's really not a great example based on what you asked.
Not even a secret scene for that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it didn't really go anywhere. The idol was already found by that point. So we were just both dumb. And God, you know, we couldn't show Joe as doing anything wrong. Yeah, definitely. You definitely are. It's very much in your head. You know, like I think I've said throughout, you know, these two podcasts, like we were thinking, you know, of course you're thinking of your own strategy and you're thinking of your own game, but you're also thinking like what would be fun for the show? Because we all care about the show. We want to like make great entertainment.
And just to completely get very meta about it, are you thinking as things are going on, like, oh, okay, that's a fishy. I'm going to give a fishy for that.
Oh, yeah, they were asking me. They were asking me, like, who gets the fishy this week, you know? Oh, do you get a fishy? And, like, at the beginning, like, I was giving myself rod fishies because, like, I was so bad. But, the producers would ask me in my interviews, like, who gets, you know, I gave Spencer the fishy for my own boot. I was bummed that didn't make my exit, but upon thinking about it, I still think Joe deserves a lot of the credit for my boot. Anyway, whatever.
All right. Matt Left In wants to know who from the Left Out 11 would you most like to have played with? So who from that group of people that didn't make the cut? Was there anybody that you were really disappointed that you didn't get to play with?
T-Bird. I was so excited to play with.
Yeah, T-Bird. You watched all of Survivor Africa, right?
Yeah, I knew T-Bird better than anybody. Yeah, exactly. And Ethan had, you know, created, you know, he hadn't like connected us, but he had like independently apparently told both of us, like, hey, T-Bird's really solid. You can trust her. And he told T-Bird, like, hey, Fishback's really solid. You can trust him. So
who did?
Ethan.
Oh, Ethan.
Yeah.
Got it.
I wanted Shane out there, you know, just because Shane. Also, like, I was one of them.
Yeah, but I feel like he was coming for you. He did not want you out there.
Well, the crazy thing is he was the one person who had reached out to me who I was responding to because A, he mm-hmm. terrified me and he was like so over the top. So I thought he like thought I was in a pregame alliance with him. So, yeah. You know, like just like he would text me or he would email me all the time. And I didn't want to like. He also was sending me screenshots of his correspondence with other people. And I was like, I don't want any part of this, you know, like, but I was trying to mollify him without committing myself to that much. Like, I didn't want to put anything into writing that would then be screenshotted to somebody else. But I also didn't want to just like leave Shane hanging. And apparently he like got the sense that I wasn't responding to him as much as he emotionally required. And I guess that caused him to turn on me. But I thought like, he was like, you and I are together and we've got the really secret alliance. I thought he was going to be on my side. And I guess the other person is Troyzan. And I know I said this before, but like,
yeah, you had a moment.
Yeah. We had a moment. And like, honestly, like that's what you go on. It's the same thing as like having that time in the boat where we all pointed at Sierra, you know, Survivor is just about like, I've got a moment. I trust you. You know, you have to make these snap decisions all the time.
So is the move on Survivor just instant eye contact with every single person? Is that what you have to be going for? Just like staring into every single person's eyes, like nodding affirmatively, like, yes, yes.
But you can't be seen to be staring into people's eyes. But I really think that's, you know, I mean, there was that whole thing about how on Worlds Apart, right? The Ponderosa, that the pregame, the Rodney, Carol, and Will thing came about because they at Ponderosa were like, you know, they had a connection. They made eye contact.
From the pregame?
Yeah, I heard that.
Wow.
So like when they all met up at the merge, they were like, so are we going to do this? And they were like, yeah, let's roll. So, you know, I think that it really matters more than, you know, those little first impression moments are really important. And that was same with Coach and JT. They were making a lot of eye contact at Ponderosa. So then when Coach finally got to JT in the merge and token chains, he was like, you know, I just knew.
A couple of people say that about JT. Like, oh, he had that look.
I said that as well. Like JT, you know, he just didn't have that. A lot of people were actually really annoyed with JT at Ponderosa pregame because he couldn't sit still. but, you know, not as relevant in the game itself.
No. Eric Macbeth has a question. Are you pumped up that we have a question from a person named Macbeth?
Yeah. Oh.
Do you think that you got more of a winner's edit in Cambodia or Token Cheens? Because the last three episodes leading up to your vote out convinced me that you had a 40% chance of winning to Jeremy's 60%. If you were watching as someone else, would you think that Steven had a 40% chance of winning based on the edit?
Well, I've been pretty consistently wrong about winner's edits. So me thinking it is not really indicative of whether or not it exists.
Can I play your winner's edit song?
Yeah.
I don't know if we ever played this on the podcast, but we've tweeted about it. This is fantastic. This is from Jaden James, who actually created this last season. Here is the Stephen Fishback winner's edit song.
I think tonight we can truly crown a winner's edit.
Tyler's edit.
Jed and Joe.
Mike.
Tyler's edit.
Jed and Joe.
Mike.
Tyler's edit.
Jed and Joe.
What a great winner.
I was wrong. I respond in the moment. I'm in the moment. I'm live tweeting. It's emotional. Things get mixed up. I was wrong in the moment, but I think that, I've said it like Tyler's at it, Joe's at it, Jet's at it, Mike's at it, Tyler's at it, Joe's at it,
Jet's
at it,
and
Tyler's at it, Joe's at it, Jet's at it, Mike's at it, Tyler's at it, Joe's at it,
Jet's
at it,
and
a winner's edit.
A winner's edit.
Winner's
edit.
Winner's edit.
A winner's edit.
A winner's edit.
Winner's edit. Winner's edit.
Big winner's edit.
Yeah, that's like the dance remix. People are listening to that in clubs everywhere.
Wow. I was dancing over here. Just listen. Yeah, that was great. That's crazy. That's fantastic. So, amazing, amazing, amazing work.
It's funny that you talk about in that song that, you're live tweeting, you get emotional.
Yeah.
And that's from season 30. It's not even from season 31 that you're getting emotional live tweeting about.
I'm an emotional Rob. I just can't control it.
But would you have felt like watching the show? Did you feel like you were getting the winner's edit?
No. Are you crazy? I got like different kinds of doofus music. Like I had like three separate different sorts of doofus music. I don't think the winner typically gets the doofus edit. In Token Chains, I think I had a really good winner's edit just in terms of, the narrative. I had a fully fleshed out narrative. People at the time commented that all of my confessionals were about me, but all of JT's confessionals were about us, meaning him and me. And they thought that was sort of going to be indicative of me winning. And this time I did not think I had a winner's edit.
Okay. Were you happy with the edit that you received? Amanda Litzinger wants to know, how did you feel about your edit, Steven?
I was mostly happy, I guess. I think that it's, I think at the end it showed me being strategic and playing the game hard. At the beginning there was like a high premium on goofy, awkward Steven. And I guess that sort of like that was true, right? I was goofy and I was awkward out there. I didn't like the fact they just showed me being goofy and awkward and not showed me playing the game hard because, I definitely stumbled that first day, but I thought that I really recovered pretty well, pretty quickly, to the point where by like day three, I thought I was in the sort of center of the Venn diagram of buy on alliances. I really felt like, I was in a pretty strong position on buy on, by like day three or four. So, I get it, that everyone is playing. There's a lot of alliances. It's a limited amount of time in the show. And, you're really only the fact that I was in it at all is great, but I wish that they had sort of balanced that kind of total goofiness with some of the me playing the game a little bit harder. And that stick thing was totally blown out of proportion.
I had gotten questions from some people who wanted to know if you still stay in contact with the stick.
The stick, yeah. He and I, it's like hard. We have our own lives. He does his thing. I do mine. It's hard to like, and once you're outside of the game too, it's like, it's just like hard to find a lot of commonalities. You've been rivals for so long. There's so much animosity there. Whenever I make a fire, I think about him.
All right, Aaron Shaw wants to know, which of your Cambodia stories will you be referencing the most in future Survivor Know-It-All episodes?
Sure. I think just the fact of having made the merge on my second time is probably the thing that's going to be coming up the most.
Just try to one-up me?
Yes, exactly. That's probably what I'll be most most leaning on. I think probably my time in the jury in terms of like how how the game impacts the jury and how the jury impacts the each other. Maybe the advantage, like, let's see what happens with that. I'm now an expert in misplaying the advantage. So, that I might use that a little bit.
Kat Smith wants to know, how many hashtags did you and the other players try to establish? Was there any sort of fatigue in that, where did you find that other players were like trying to, create the hashtag quite a bit while you were out there?
You mean other than extreme gastrointestinal distress?
Yeah.
Not really. I know that they did like hashtag blindside. That Wes had that, but like, we made those jokes. It's funny. You're on Survivor and you all watch Survivor, and you're all fans of the show. So it's like we all make Survivor jokes. So, we made a lot of like, hashtag blindside jokes. You made like every tribal council, someone was telling Keith to stick to the plan, like it was just like, we're all making the references, that we all love, but I didn't find that people were like forward thinking and like, oh, what's this episode's hashtag going to be?
Yeah. The severe gastrointestinal distress thing was funny because it's so long, it couldn't possibly be the hashtag. Yeah. So it was funny to talk about that as the hashtag. But I have to imagine that it would be kind of annoying if people were like trying to make a certain hashtag happen in the moment, feeling like that they were going to then get that up on the screen.
Yeah, I was just trying to drop references to the know-it-alls in my Twitter account. You know, like that's all. Like, how do we build an audience using CBS? But I don't think any of them really made it in.
Okay, this is from Andrew Brockman, who wants to know, what were the jury's opinions on the players left in the game after your departure? Who was the surprising favorite? Who had no chance of winning? When you got to the jury, were you surprised to hear sort of like through the echo chamber of like, okay, you got there and then the jury is like, oh yeah, we really think Abby Maria is playing the best game. And it's like, what are you guys crazy? Is there any sort of like, you know, reconciling like what the jury perception is based on like what was actually happening in the game?
Well, I think most juries, and especially, and our jury was definitely this way. And I'm going to assume a lot of juries are like this. They really root for the underdog, right? They really don't like people who are being arrogant in the game. They also don't like the people who got them out in the game. And I was shocked when I got out, like I said, that like Kimmy was the overwhelming favorite of the jury as it existed. And until Kimmy came, like everyone basically was like rooting for Kimmy. And like whenever a new player person came to Ponderosa, they would be like, you know, we're all voting for Kimmy. We're going to give it to Kimmy. So that was surprising to me.
Is that a flaw in the game in that the jury roots for the people who have the least control in the decisions and are also the person who did not do anything to get them out?
Yes, but aren't you the one who said that the jury, you know, is not a flaw?
I don't mind the jury talking as much as that they're favoring the person who had the least to do with.
The whole problem with the jury talking is that they make bitter, you know, it reinforces bitter, bad decision making. Not that like together they're going to make a fantastic decision, you know, like the, yeah, that's the, I feel like we're
going to
disconnect here. I think that is the hard part of the game though, right? Like that is the hard part of jury management, is voting out the jury and then getting the jury to like you nonetheless. And that is, I feel like, more the essence of the game than sort of controlling the crosstalk at Ponderosa. Now, one thing I gave Wentworth a lot of credit for in my blogs, which he was really fantastic about, was like jury eye contact. You know, the jury, like Cochran told me
before, more eye contact.
Yes. More eye contact. The eye contact is the secret to Survivor. Before I went out there, Cochran told me, you know, the jury just wants to like feel like they're still a part of the game. And as much as possible, you should, in normal tribal councils, not just like, you know, final tribal, just refer to them by name. So say like, you know, just he would like offhandedly refer to something Philip had done as being relevant now. And that would make Philip feel really good sitting over there on the jury, because the jury feels really disconnected and like they're irrelevant and like, you know, the game is going on without them. So like to be able to do that is really useful. Now, Wentworth was awesome at like making eye contact with the jury, kind of like, you know, gesturing to us, you know, and she built up a lot of good blood, you know, and had really got, you know, I think the jury would have been rooting for her anyway, just because she was an underdog, but just in terms of like how much she kind of looked over to us, engaged us, you know, reacted, you know, she has those big faces, but she's not just reacting for the TV cameras, you know, she's reacting for us who are sitting, you know, 20, 30 feet away from her. You know, Jeremy was not that good at that. Jeremy would sort of, you know, Jeremy like never smiled. He always was looking at the ground, you know, like shuffling his feet, you know, head in his hands. He was not that good at it. Spencer was bad at it. He would kind of like look over at us with these sort of like puppy dog like smiles, and they're like, oh God, it was just so awkward. But Wentworth was really, really, really good at it. So I don't know what that was.
But is that easier to do though when you don't have the blood on your hands? Where if you were a person who blindsided somebody, sent them to the jury, and then you keep mentioning them, doesn't the person on the jury get annoyed? Like, stop talking about me.
Oh, totally, totally. And I think that like there, you know, I think there probably is an element, and especially they're like smiling over to you. You're like, screw you, don't smile at me. There's definitely an element to where it like reinforces the existing opinion of you, right?
Right.
And I think, you know, I agree with you that a flaw in the game is that underdogs are inherently going to be rooted for. But like, you know, you say that vis-a-vis Kimmy, but is it also a flaw that the jury is rooting for Wentworth? Like, you know, instead of Jeremy or Spencer, who are playing the better, more dominant, not the better games necessarily, but the more dominant games, let's say, you know, I think everyone would, I don't think anyone would say that, right?
Mm-hmm. So the jury is ideally looking for the middle of the Venn diagram between most likable and least blood on their hands.
That's probably right. I mean, I think it depends on the jury, you know, and it depends on the person. You know, I was always going to vote for Jeremy if Jeremy was in the end, right?
Yeah.
I was always going to vote for the person who played the best game, you know, regardless of who it was in the end. You know, it was beguiling the thought of voting for Kimmy. And I was talking Kimmy up. I was just never going to vote for her. Like at Ponderosa, I was like, yeah, Kimmy would be a great winner, wouldn't she? I mean, I couldn't have cast that vote myself, but like it would have been great to see her win.
Wait, isn't Kimmy going to be upset when she hears you say this?
Wait, what? That I wouldn't have voted for her?
Yeah. Why wouldn't she be a great winner? You're going to alienate the Kimmy fans.
No, I'm saying I would have. I'm saying that I would. I was saying that Kimmy would have been a great winner. I was going to always vote for Jeremy, but like I think Kimmy would have been a great winner, and like she would have like you know, she more than anyone could have needed and deserved the money. And then when Kimmy was voted out, I think a lot of people were voting for Keith. You know, that sort of, and that's why when Keith was voted out, like you see the jury's face basically fall. You know, I think with Keith and Kimmy, you know, people were saying like, listen, we need to hear what they have to say. You know, Cass was really, you know, she would always say like, I need Kimmy to be able to justify why she played the best game for Kimmy, you know, not why she played the best game overall, but why she, given the card she was dealt, played the best game for herself. You know, Kimmy is never going to be able to play a Joe game or a Jeremy game, but Kimmy can play a great Kimmy game. And I think everyone kind of, and that was the same thing with Keith. Like we needed to hear from Keith why Keith played the best Keith game. And I think that was one great thing about this jury too, was that there was an acknowledgement that different people would have to play different games based on who they were. And to be able to defend that game and explain it, I think was going to be the metric for success.
All right. Kelly Priest asked this question in the comments of the last podcast, wanting to know about how do you think the game would have been different if you would have started at Takeo? Do you think that you would have gotten further or not done as well to have started at Takeo, where you said, admittedly, more of your friends from before the game started were on Takeo?
I mean, in my mind, right. So I would have swapped with Spencer, right? In that case, like I would not have been with Spencer. I think the way that they separated the tribes was kind of like, this guy's roughly this guy, that guy's roughly that guy, this girl's roughly this girl, you know, kind of like,
sure. Okay. So now we put you in for Spencer at Takeo. Who goes home first vote?
Abby. I don't think, you know, I think I was friends.
Wow. You turned the tide for Vetus.
I was friends with Vetus and I was friendly with, I like to think that I could have played, bridged those two divides. Cause like, you know, my friends out there were like, you know, Shireen, I really liked Wentworth. I had a thing with PG and Terry, right? And
yeah,
Vetus.
But those were all the people that were trying, other than Terry, those were all the people that were in that beach alliance. Those were the beach people.
That's what I'm saying. Other than Terry and Vetus too. So it's like, I feel like I could have bridged, you know, I think Shireen did come in guns blazing a little bit for,
you would have been the heroes versus villains Tyson and been the glue to bring the beach people and the shelter people together.
I just think like that divide, right, is inherently going to a little bit fake, right? Any like strict alliance divide is based in part on what happens and not actually how things were. Does that make sense? Like probably there's like 100 different alliances, but the two dominant alliances as played out were beach people versus shelter people. There's probably more interplay between those two groups than we saw. And I like to think that it would have been a totally, you know, you can't farther versus less far. It's impossible to say because like it's a totally different, you know, set of circumstances. I mean, I probably also in that group would have played a more conservative game because I wasn't, you know, I didn't have these like huge guys who were, you know, kind of in my mind obstructing my path to victory.
Yeah, I don't know if it would have played out like that because I just feel like that it seemed like the women were the people that really wanted to go against Vetus.
I just think that like, you know, we're seeing a narrative that explains why Vetus went home, right? You say, okay, there's these two sides. These people want him out. Therefore he's going. I'm sure there were like every single person came in with a lot of different possibilities. Like I would like to see one of these six people go, you know? And I think it's, you know, conversations, you know, a single conversation can sway the whole thing. you know, Varner didn't come in necessarily thinking that he wanted to vote out Vitas. You know, he came in and saw that these old school players were like really, you know, kind of caught in this old school way of thinking. And then so he sort of switched. So, you know, there's a lot more flow than I think thinking about it from the terms of like the alliances that we see actually exist.
Maybe you could have made old school seem a little more palatable.
Yeah, that's, I mean, you know, it's so speculative, you know, it's, but like, I just don't think it's, I never think that there's like, you know, maybe in token chains, there were like two alliances and then, you know, I was in a third, I think in this season, and I'm sure it was true for Takeo, there was probably 50 alliances among 10 people, you know, so
hashtag voting blocks.
So, you know, I think the show has to tell a story of like these two, this group versus this group, but it's not that rigid.
And then who's the second boot then this season? Abby went home first.
Well, who knows? You know, maybe Takeo wins that. No, I mean, Joe is so dominant in puzzles and in challenges that he is very hard to beat. He is so good at puzzles in a way that's scary. And Cass is really good too. I think like Bion kind of was stacked. Having Joe and then also having Cass, like, and then just also kind of having probably the stronger of the two groups, you know, across the board. You know, I think maybe the strength was more evenly distributed among Takeo, and that's really good in sort of like the kind of team athletic challenges, like running over the, you know, running over the, whatever they were, the pyramids, or like, you know, getting the, you know, navigating a raft. But challenges are not really as team-based, right? They're more like they favor groups that have specialization. And I think Bion was definitely that tribe. So, you know, probably Takeo would have still lost the first two challenges.
Yeah.
And, you know, who knows who goes home second, you know, it's that kind of speculation. How do you even speculate about that?
Yeah. It's really hard to say, because now at that point, like the whole like inciting incident of the second episode is when Abby Maria gets her feelings hurt with PG and Shireen, and then Terry and Jeff Varner start talking to her, and then they swing the whole thing. So now at this point, you know, in this, you're talking about being the hero of your own narrative, you've bridged the two warring factions together.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's nobody to vote out now. You've got this 9-person solid alliance.
Listen, if I had been on Takeo, I would have brought us all together. We would have won every challenge. I would have been a straight path, and I would have like emerged as a unanimous victor of the season. I think that's pretty easy to prove definitively through reason.
Okay. Matt Holtzclaw wants to know, what did you expect to happen when Angkor went to their first tribal? Were you rooting for Savage to be voted out?
I was rooting for Savage to be voted out. I really wanted him gone. I was like, you know, I thought there was a good chance he would be gone. You know, certainly we saw that tribe, right? It was like that was a disaster tribe going to the disaster place. You know, all of the kind of erratic, hot-headed personalities in one place on the worst, you know, on the worst tribe. You know, I thought there's a chance they would keep him just for like strength and challenges. And I was really worried that Tasha would go, but like, you know, when we saw them come back and PG was voted out first from that group, you know, that was a shocker. And I was like really excited for Tasha. And I actually kind of made a, you know, whispered to her at one point, like, are you good? You need me to throw this challenge right before we did the slingshot challenge. I ended up throwing for her anyway. Yeah.
So you officially did throw it.
Oh, no. I mean, like, subconsciously threw.
Subconsciously threw.
Yeah.
Okay. Samantha Alexander wants to know, what was Steven's favorite moment on the show? Did you have one favorite moment from this season?
Yeah. Getting voted on, obviously, was a major, major, major highlight. You know, like, that was, like, far and away, like, the greatest moment of the whole thing. And then there's a few moments like going there, like en route. I remember taking the boat to Kurong Island and just being like, this is amazing. Like, these 20 people and I are going on this insane adventure. You know, America chose us. We're about to play this great, like, the greatest game in the history of the world. You know, like, just what a gift this is, you know, to be here and have this. So, you know, just those moments of gratitude. I mean, in terms of the actual show, like, this is it's a weird one, but it really stuck with me. The first swap, you know, obviously that going from like being in the minority, like a minority position on my tribe to a, you know, the dominant position, that was awesome. But, when on the second buy-on, when we won that giant blocks challenge, that was such a high, cause it was like such a brutal challenge. It was so hot. Everyone was about to die. And we came together and worked together so well. And like, we beat Takeo, who we thought was unbeatable. And just like winning that was like such an awesome, awesome high. And really kind of maybe the capstone or maybe my favorite moment from the whole thing.
Which episode is this? The Giant Blocks Challenge?
I don't know. I mean, it's 5, 6. It was when, I don't know. It's when there's three tribes. It's I don't remember who's voted. I think maybe Varner's voted out because he injured his foot in that challenge.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the blindfold challenge.
Yeah, the blindfold challenge. Exactly.
Oh yeah, I hate that challenge.
I mean, it's dangerous. There's these giant heavy blocks that blindfolded people. I was like, everyone got injured. I got like my one knocked into my head. You know, Spencer took a lot of falls. It was a really, really hard challenge. Oh yeah, of course you hate it, right? You specifically hate it. Yeah, that's your terminal challenge.
But I was sitting out.
Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah. So it's terrible. I have to watch people get hurt and then I get voted out.
Yeah. It is terrible. That's hard.
Terrible.
Yeah.
They should retire that one. That was your best moment.
I know it sounds stupid. I mean, some of like the food, you know, some of like the winning reward, like I think the first reward I won, I was like super, super stoked about, you know, the winning the reward that I did. I mean, there's a lot of the great thing about Survivor, you know, and the terrible thing is that there are just such huge emotional, you know, highs and lows, right? You get highs and lows like you almost don't go anywhere else. And so you have like these moments of like total joy and these moments of abject misery. I mean, another great moment was when we got the new shelter and like coming back to that from just getting dumped on and having like a cookie, you know, we had a cookie and we had coffee and like that was such a great, you know, nice, just like little thing amidst all the misery of the show.
I still say your best moment was when you got Abby Maria to take the wrong puzzle clue. That was still the best, yeah. I think.
Okay.
You're selling low on that one.
Yeah.
Okay. Ron Chan wants to know, Steven, which cast members from this season would you like to see on Third Time's a Charm? So, all right, so pick a couple people. You get to green light them to go on Third Time's a Charm.
I think Spencer would be great in like a couple of years. I'd love to see Spencer play again. You know, he says,
but does he want to do it?
He says he wants to. I get to green light. This is my choice. It's not Spencer's choice.
I kind of feel like he has to want to turn the key also.
I think, you know, in a couple of years when he's got a little bit, you know, he's a little bit older, you know, maybe, you know, I think he'll be, you know, it'd be really great to see him play again. You know, Wentworth, obviously, of course, you know, fantastic player. I would love to see her play the game again. You know, especially just this whole season seemed to be like her really coming out of her shell. And like some of that was
coming out party.
Coming out party. Yeah. For some of that was like almost, I think, her proving herself to herself. You know, there were a lot of moments like, oh, my God, I did that. So I think for her to come in with that mentality of like, I can do anything would be really cool. I don't know who else was on this season. You know, I always want to see Jeremy play again. You know, I doubt he would if that's a criterion. Yeah. Varner, of course, Varner, right? Who doesn't want to see Varner play again?
That'd be fun.
Yeah. You know, I think someone like, Tasha. Yeah. Tasha, I'd love to see again. Abby, you know, you always want to.
Well, then I don't say everybody.
Oh no, I won't. I mean, Abby, okay. I think is at, you know, playing with Abby is the worst experience in my life, but I think
so. Are you like RC now? Would you, if you were going to come back and they told you Abby was going to be on the season, would you say you're out?
No, but you know, I think, you know, no, I mean,
you get it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, I totally get it. You know, I think everyone who played with her gets it, you know, it's just like, it's like this total like life force suck, you know, Malcolm called her a dementor. I think she's a wonderful person in real life, but not on Survivor.
Am I crazy? I feel like I'd be able to get along well with Abby.
I thought that about myself. I did. And in fact, when I met her at the merch, we had a really delightful conversation at the merch feast. And it's a trap, Rob. It's a trap. Like I was hearing all of these nightmare stories from everyone about how impossible she was, how like crazy, just like how she like was so paranoid, how she'd throw an entire alliance under the bus, how she like the backstab her allies as much as her enemies. She was just mean. And I was like, oh, whatever. Like, you know, this is secondhand. You guys just suck. You know, like I can get along with anyone. Nope.
Okay. Later this week, I'm going to be talking with Kelly Wentworth and doing a interview with her.
She won't. What's admit one it. She question? Won't, she won't admit it about Abby. What's one question?
I was going to be I will ask her about the Abby Maria thing. But give me one question for Kelly Wentworth that you would like to know the answer to.
Well, would it be about her game or my game? Or like, you know,
well, I guess it could be either. This is your chance to submit a question for the Kelly Wentworth interview that's coming up.
I want to know, let me give you a few, you know, and like,
okay.
Yeah. Did she actually want to work with me going into the game? And at what point did that kind of window of opportunity close? Because I, you know, when I met up with her, I kept on like trying to sort of work with her because it was like Kelly Wentworth, you know, I was so excited. It was like, you know, and then I always felt like it didn't really, you know, connect. Like I would go to her and be like, hey, let's do something, you know, or at least keep lines of communication open. And then within like seconds, it would get back to Joe. And I felt like, you know, that the other thing is like, what happened? Why not Jeremy? Why not vote out Jeremy instead of me? Like, it's so crazy to me that they went that route.
Okay. So basically these are very Steven centric questions.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, what should I feel like there's a lot of people out there who have like, you know, great, great insightful questions about her game and her choices, but mine are going to specifically relate to me. Yeah, of course.
Okay. Why would I vote out Jeremy at final?
I mean, let's make that the question, because that's not just Steven centric, and any thinking person would have that question, right?
Good. Good. It's a good question.
Yeah.
Okay. This is from Karen Bell Eisenberg. What's did you recite any other poems that we didn't see on TV? Were you armed with like a poem for any sort of thing that could be happening?
I had a handful of poems. I did. And I recited a couple of them. You know, in Token Sheens, I love poetry. I memorize poetry. It's something I do. But in Token Sheens, you know, at night at camp, I would recite poems. And, you know, that... it really humanized me and it really connected me to a lot of the people out there. And it was just like very natural. And I came in this time thinking, okay, that worked great for me the first time, you know, I should be ready to do that again this time. And I did. And I tried it a few times and it just never connected in the same way. And so the poem that you actually saw was the last poem that I think I ever recited.
Ever?
Well, not ever, but like on the show. Okay. Because it just was clearly like more forced than it should have been. It should have been like a natural, fun, you know, interesting, you know, like Tasha would recite proverbs or, you know, like people would tell stories or jokes, you know, you find ways to pass the time.
You know, I've memorized a number of my podcasts that like people just said, you know, if I'm in a group and I'm trying to like fit in, I'll have a couple of go-to podcasts that I will tell people.
Who are the guests?
Oh, do you remember, I interviewed, Troyzan, I think it was on Thanksgiving Day, back in, 2011, I think, that one is, you know, always a crowd pleaser.
Yeah. I bet you do a good Troyzan impersonation.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic.
But anyway, like that kind of got to the heart, the fact that I wasn't connecting in that way kind of got to the heart of what I think kind of went wrong for me this season, was that I just was not connecting to the people like naturally. And like this crowd, it looked like I should have been more than the Token Sheens crowd, you know, where like there were lawyers out there, you know, there were a lot more white collar people, there were more city people than in Token Sheens, but for whatever reason, you know, I just like didn't jive with them. And you know, I was friendly with them, and you know, one or two of them I really became close with, but like I really think that sort of sense of like jibingness, you know, which is kind of, there's no way you know who exactly, you know, it's like that Troyzan moment, you know, it's like I felt like I could jive with Troyzan.
The one from my podcast back in 2011.
yeah, exactly. No,
I think it was 2012.
Yeah.
To be honest.
You know, it accounts for so much, just that sort of like random kind of magical quality of like, who do I inherently get along with? You know, like Rodney and Will, you know, you wouldn't have expected to get along, but they did. And that's just sort of the way it works. Like,
eye contact.
Yeah. Or just people get along for weird reasons and they don't. And it's like, it's not something you can put on paper in a spreadsheet.
Okay.
Stop using spreadsheets, Rob.
Yeah. I like that about jivingness.
Yeah. Jivingness. I just think it's like that magical quality, you know?
All right. Ben Dubs wants to know, were the Dirty 30 as annoying in real life as they are in social media? Before the finale, you tweeted basically something that said, you can't wait to get to the finale to find out if the Dirty 30 is as annoying in person as they are on social media.
Yeah, that really, people were coming up to me and was like, I loved your tweet. Thank you for saying that. Thank you for saying that. We're all thinking. they were very nice. You know, they're all really nice people. I loved Tyler. You know, I met So. She was fantastic. You know, Max and I are friends. So it's like, I was being a jerk.
So you like them all individually, but you feel like the Voltron collective unit is too much to handle.
Yeah. I mean, there's just like, you know, and then, you know, so you can't complain about someone's social media presence without people then being like, well, why don't you unfollow them if you don't like them so much? You know what I mean? All right. So I don't want to like, you know, go down that rabbit hole either, but like, you know, there's a little bit of like, you can exist without tweeting everything. You know, pick up the phone, guys, you know, send a text message, Don't just communicate with each other via Twitter.
Now, did you try to get the fun 31 thing to happen?
God, if anything, the Dirty 30 gave us, it was something to react against. Everyone was very much like, guys, we can't be that. No matter what happens, that can't be us. While we were out there, we would just like make fun of them a lot.
Louise Johnson wants to know.
Hi, Louise.
Did you read the Survivor Wiki to research players before you left to play?
I did not. I did not. I felt like I did. I watched Survivor Africa. That was I watched portions. I watched like memorable portions of seasons. Like I watched like parts of Survivor China just to keep it. And then I watched part of San Juan del Sur. It actually turned out to be relevant because there was that whole thing with John, Mish, and Jeremy with like the idol where they were lying. Like someone was like, John was like lying to Jeremy about the idol or whatever. And I just wanted to like see how Jeremy reacted in that situation to kind of like get some of his beats in terms of like a high stress, liar lying moment. Just tried to find a few key moments that might be revelatory of how people would act in a certain situation.
You go into the game film.
Oh yeah. People
watching tape.
People don't change really. I think to a certain, in terms of their fundamental qualities.
Good stuff. All right. Well, Steven, this was so nice of you to come back for a second time.
That was a pleasure.
This is great. I'm so happy you haven't found something better to do with your time than stand here and talk to me for hours on end about this Survivor experience. It was a treat.
Well, I've been sitting.
Yes. Yeah. Well, Steven, great job. Of course, everybody's very excited about your homecoming to the Survivor Know-It-Alls, and they could be there live on the West Coast for the first time ever, February 24th at the Hollywood Improv. It's going to be a great night. Hopefully, many survivors in attendance. You could see a real-life two-time survivor in Steven Fishback in person. Super excited to get this going, Steven.
I can't wait. I know. I'm so excited to come back to the Know-It-Alls. I'm excited to come back to the live Know-It-Alls. Honestly, like those are legitimately, and this says a lot about my life, some of the most fun moments of my life are the live Know-It-Alls. Just like meeting the Know-It-Alls crew in person, interacting with them, like getting to like get drinks and chat Survivor. It's like so fun.
I said that back in the first Know-It-Alls that we did, and then you accused me of pandering on the stage.
I'm willing to accuse you of anything. Sure. Okay.
All right. Well, Steven, this was great. How about for a hashtag for this podcast? Did I give out the link? robisawebsite.com/KIA live4 for the tickets. For a hashtag, what do you think of jivingness?
Oh, I like that. Jivingness. It's great. That's the secret sauce. Jivingness.
Yeah. If you have jivingness with everybody, then you can win.
This is going to be like the new voting block. Tony talked about jivingness. Oh my God. In season two, Australia, they were already talking about jivingness. This isn't a new idea.
Here, I'll be Jeff. Let me get ready. Okay. Steven, if you had to put your finger on what it is that makes this game click for some people, but then other people have so much difficulty, what would you say it is?
So I would also pause a second after Jeff asked something, just because I wanted to like gather my thoughts.
Yeah.
Jeff, I think in this season, different than any other season in the show's history, this season is all about jivingness. And I think we've seen that every single tribal council.
Yes. It's the most jivingest season ever. All right. Well, Steven, great job as usual. You could follow and taunt Steven Fishback on Twitter. He is at Steven Fishback.
Please.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. And then, of course, very excited. I'm hoping that we can do some more stuff in the lead up to Survivor 31. I'm hoping that this Family Feud game comes together.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Looking forward to a very fun march to Survivor 32. You pumped up for Koh Rong?
I'm so excited. It'll be fun to like see the same beaches that I was on and like how the other people are using them differently. We would like find little like coconut husks under trees or like I think Joe found a tree that had like hash marks on it, to count days. So I'm really excited to see the new season.
Yeah. Are you excited for like tweets that are going to be like, oh, that place that you were putting your head on, that's where I went to the bathroom every day.
Yeah. I mean, I guess like, you mean from me or from the cat?
No, from, they were there before
they
you.
Were there first,
so it's
right.
sort of like a little backwards. Yeah.
I mean, Yeah, I guess that's exciting.
I guess so.
Yeah.
It'll be a thing. Yeah. All right. Well, Stephen, again, great job. We got a lot more coming up this week. Of course, our Kelly Wentworth interview is coming up next. And hopefully we do a couple more of these. Who else should we talk to, Stephen?
I would love to hear Spencer if you can get him to do it. You know,
if we can get him.
You know, Jeremy, get Jeremy. Jeremy's great. He's hilarious. He's got, you know, obviously he has so much insight into like the way to win.
We were talking right after the finale. We were going to do it. And then, I don't know that it seems like, hopefully we can still get him. Maybe he might've changed his mind.
No, he'll do it. My God. Yeah. And, Tasha, you should get Tasha. I'd love to hear like some of her thoughts. Cause you know, she got to the end. She sort of really got kind of shat on. And then, you know, I'd love to just.
By who? By the jury?
Yeah. By the jury.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd love to sort of see her thoughts about her game, the Moosh, because she played a very aggressive, very strong game throughout.
Yeah. All right. Well, all good stuff. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Go to robiswebsite.com/iTunes or subscribe in your whatever native podcatcher you are working with. And of course, don't forget the Survivor Know-It-Alls with Stephen Fishback. Woo! Will return season premiere February 17th. 2016. Can you believe it?
I can't believe it.
It's all happening.
Yeah.
All right. We will talk to you then. Have a good one, everybody. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Bye.
The smartest guys around are about to break it down like they've won the game a million times.
Well, actually, they didn't really win the game at all.
Survivor Know-It-Alls.